TV File, the ultimate Buccaneers podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It is time for the big interview as we cover the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This week, our guest, TJ Reeves. And here we go. It's a laundry list of what TJ's got going on. He is the Bucs sideline reporter. You find him on Twitter at Buc sideline reporter if you're looking for that. He's also at Buccaneers.com doing video coverage for them. He does Dirk Cutter's coaches show every week on Monday nights. You can find this guy everywhere. Just make sure you're following him on Twitter. He'll let you know what he's up to. TJ, let's start here with the Bucs. You just talked about Dirk Cutter. How is he being received overall by the fans? I know that fans have a tendency to be very impatient, but do they like who they have in the coach's chair?
Well, I think it's one of those situations where change has been a constant over the course now of the last 5 years. This is the fourth new head coach in the last five football seasons. So you are ready to see somebody else yet again tee it up. And, look, the offense had tremendous success a year ago. There are no complaints about Jameis Winston throwing for 4,000 yards and Doug Martin being second in the NFL in rushing. And you start with that base with the understanding that this guy's the architect behind that, second year to work with Jameis, off-season, training camp, preseason, a lot of weapons to work with, Nate, on that offense especially. And then he brings in Mike Smith, the former Falcons head coach, in a role reversal where Smith had been the head coach in Atlanta and Cutter had been the offensive coordinator. Well, now Cutter's the head coach, Smith's the D coordinator to fix a defense that has Gerald McCoy, Levante David, and company. So there is a lot of optimism around here. And, you know, everybody's optimistic this time of year, but there are a lot of pieces in place for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If they can be coached up and put in the right position, there is a great chance that this team can be looking at that P word, playoffs, and at least be in the conversation come December.
As you get ready for the season, give me your training camp and preseason assessment of where Jameis Winston's at.
I think he's made progress. He's definitely leaner. He's knocked off probably about another 15 pounds of body fat mass, whatever you want to call it, and reshaped himself. And there is no doubt that there's huge expectation on him after the year he had a year ago to take the next step. It is not a finished product. They only won six games a year ago despite all the stats. So now the next step is get to the eighth, the ninth win. I think Buccaneer fans would trade some of the stats, maybe even some interceptions, if you could win some more games out of this when it's all said and done. But he's got great leadership qualities. I'm around him a bunch. Interview him for the pregame and the postgame show virtually every game. And he has an air about him. He has a maturity level about him. This is clearly his locker room, and it's only year two for him. But that's not uncommon for a lot of young quarterbacks, that they become the guy and the guy in the locker room, and he has become very demonstrative on the sideline, practice field. So Jameis is really embracing that role, Nate.
I think sometimes, TJ, the tendency, you were talking about Doug Martin a minute ago, would be for folks to be concerned about a running back who had 1,400 yards. Can he repeat that? But when you look at Martin, you see a guy that's 27 years old. He's right in his prime. Do the Bucs plan to try to essentially ride him pretty hard and see him get to 1,400 or 1,500 yards again?
In a word, yes. I believe he's a key part of what they're trying to do. He was healthy for a good portion most of last season, had not been healthy really the last couple of years, a shoulder injury that cut short his year in 2013. He had a knee sprain and ankle problems in 2014. So finally in 2015, a healthy Doug Martin that was in fantastic shape with a different offense that featured him just exploded again, just like his rookie year. Bookends of his four-year contract were tremendous, so great timing for him. And, yeah, he is very much in his prime. He is definitely a guy that can also sneaky catch the ball out of the backfield a bunch and make some plays. And I don't think that it is overreaching to say he can be a guy that gets 15, 16, 1,700 yards from scrimmage again, 10, 11, 12 touchdowns. If he's healthy, those are very realistic numbers, and he is going to be a big part of their offense.
When you look at the offense, let's talk about the tight end position. It feels like there's really a full-fledged competition, even though Austin Seferian-Jenkins was a big name, kind of a sexy pick in fantasy, if you will, last year. But is there a full-fledged battle going on at tight end?
Absolutely. Well, Dirk Cutter announced earlier in training camp that Cameron Brate would be the starting tight end. Now, they run a lot of two tight end stuff where Seferian-Jenkins is going to be on the field, and there are a couple of other tight ends. Veterans that are around that are blockers and somewhat pass catchers, and then there's a couple of young guys. And Seferian Jenkins has really taken that as a challenge to try to battle back. And look, I'm one of those who believes you can't have enough weapons. And both of those guys have size. Jameis used Cameron Brate a bunch in the red zone for some touchdowns in the second half of last season. Seferian Jenkins is a huge dude. I mean, he is every bit of about 6'6", and every bit of about 250 pounds. Running around at tight end, and you can't have enough of those guys in and around the goal line and in the red zone as targets to throw to. I think both of them will be effective. Seferian Jenkins has had some injury problems, had a back problem at the end of his rookie year 2 years ago, had a shoulder injury early on in 2015 that sidelined him for about 8 or 9 weeks, came back the second half of the year. So he's got to stay healthy, but Cameron Brate, a great story, an undrafted free agent out of Harvard, thank you very much, that makes his way to the NFL. It's not just about Ryan Fitzpatrick, the quarterback, being from Harvard. We got a Harvard guy with the Bucks who can play tight end in Cameron Brate.
What about the front five from an offensive line standpoint? We know that Jameis Winston was hit 109 times last year. Is the line improving to try to minimize that?
Yeah, they've got to, and Logan Mankins, the perennial Pro Bowler, has retired off of that line. Now they hit on two draft picks. Donovan Smith, the left tackle, started every game a year ago as a rookie out of Penn State. A Division III kid in Ali Marpet, who played well, missed only, I believe, one game last year, played very effective at right guard on this team. Look, it's not an overwhelming offensive line, but by the same token, they're good. And you don't throw for 4,000 yards and have a back that goes for 1,400 yards if you're not blocking people up front. They were much improved a year ago. Joel Hawley, the center, played for Dirk Cutter in Atlanta previously when he was the offensive coordinator. He comes in as the center with Cutter's offense last year, and it's no coincidence that they began to succeed the way that they did. So there have been some injuries in training camp. Got to get a little healthier on that O-line. But I think they will be fine. They're never going to be confused with an overpowering, the dominating offensive line yet. They are still a work in progress, but they are not a weak link. This is a much better offensive line.
Well, if you're going to be a first-round pick and you're going to be a cornerback, the best thing you can possibly ask for to start to write your NFL script is a couple of preseason interceptions. Obviously, some high expectations when you're a first-round pick, but talk about Vernon Hargraves.
Yeah, and he was spectacular in that Jacksonville game because both of those were great interceptions. One, a leaping interception that he made in the second half. It's just not an everyday play, even in the National Football League. The guy's got great skills around the football as a DB and great instincts. He's not the biggest of DBs, but he can play. And, I was talking with a colleague of mine this week who worked with Vernon Hargraves and works with the defensive backs every year prior to the combine at a camp that they do in Florida. He was around Vernon Hargraves, and he could not sing his praises enough prior to the combine, prior to the draft, was so excited to see the Buccaneers end up with him and see the success. And what he says, having been out at a couple of practices and watching the preseason games, wait till he figures out how to play in an NFL scheme. Then it's even scarier, because right now he's doing a lot of this without full understanding of the NFL and the NFL scheme. So Vernon Hargraves is a guy that the Buccaneers believe could be a really good corner for a long time, and only a rookie, and already in the first couple of weeks of preseason football has moved his way up the depth chart to where he's seeing a lot of action with the first team guys. That's a really good sign.
Last one for you. As we sit here, as we record this, there's still a couple of weeks left in the preseason before we get to week one. What's the one thing, TJ, that you're still looking for from this team?
I think it comes back to being able to finish the year. I mean, a year ago they got to 6-6, and a lot of these guys were on that team. They could not finish. They could not make the playoffs. So even if you get off to a good start, even if you win some games in the middle of the year in October and November to put yourself in position, we won't know this answer until late November, December. Can this team win when the chips are down? That's what's going to tell the real story of the 2016 Buccaneers, because there was improvement a year ago, and they had gotten themselves into the playoff picture. They just couldn't finish the year. So a lot of weapons on this team, a lot of excitement, a lot of enthusiasm, and I think getting off to a good start will help. This is a team that has unfortunately been 1-3 or 0-4 each of the last 4 years. Get off to the good start and then finish with some wins late in the year, and you could be talking playoffs.
He's TJ Reeves. He's on Twitter at Buck Sideline Reporter. You find him on Buccaneers.com doing the video content there. The host of a Dirt Cutters Coaches Show on Monday night, and of course a part of the Buccaneers Radio Network. TJ with us as part of the big interview. TJ, appreciate the time. Thank you, my friend.
Nate Lundy, always a pleasure to be with you. Be well. Happy football.
Stick around. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next as we go around the league.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your off season been?
It's been great. As usual, too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff, and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback, let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, what the old adage is, if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits in the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that, you say that, and people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy. But obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer, so he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Oh, I don't think so. Particularly when we're talking, it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte, and how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand, and if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
the coach Brian Billick with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, we're at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing, about who are the teams that are going to surprise us. And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, as Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because, obviously, Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat? And well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year. You go, how can a first-year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better. And obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it, no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me in December when they win the division.
All right. Question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle's an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclass.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week, and it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.